So this is a panel on how to convince your colleagues to do stuff that they don't really want to do. And I need to apologize because I put the PowerPoint presentation together. Mercifully, it's only two slides long, and this is one of them. But unfortunately, you'll discover that I discovered the joys of cheesy stock photography. So you're going to see a lot of cheesy stock photos. So here's my advice. I have no idea what their advice is. The general question is, you would like to convince people to do something, and maybe they're skeptical about it. This is something I've had to deal with, and I'm sure that Herb and Andre have had to deal with it as well, whether it's a particular language feature or a particular testing framework, whatever. So this is my advice on how to approach that problem. First thing to remember, pain is your best friend. No, this is very, very serious. If you want to convince somebody to change what they're doing, what you want to do is find something that is terribly unpleasant for them. So if you want somebody to change the way they do builds or whatever, if it turns out that build time is a big problem, you want to focus on that. Or if it turns out that unreadable code is a problem, you want to focus on that. Or if it turns out that they can't change things on a regular basis because they have no idea what's going to break, you want to focus on that. If you go to a happy, contented person who has no real problems with things and try to get them to change things, they'll go, yeah, that sounds nice, and they will not do anything at all. So the first thing you need to do is if you want to make a case for something, find a pain point, because that is going to be by far your strongest argument on how to get people to at least consider doing something differently. You need to offer them relief from their pain.
I could just throw in, this is so important because it shows how they can use this right away. And so often it can be useful, I found, just to ask them, boy, tell me like one or two things that you wish you could do differently or that weren't so painful. Let them tell you why they need the tool or what part of the language or a new compiler feature or whatever it is will help them.
Yeah. So anyway, so number one on my list is pain. Number two on my list is efficiency. Efficiency, this is specific to a C and a C++ audience. It doesn't matter whether efficiency is important. Everybody loves efficiency. So it's like offering people more money. So if you can make an efficiency argument, you want to make an efficiency argument because there are no C++ programmers who don't care about efficiency. So that's always a very strong argument. It's especially a strong argument if efficiency is already a pain point. But the point is, in and of itself, it's a good argument. Those are the two strongest things that I can encourage you to focus on is pain and efficiency. So the third thing I have, there is somebody, I guess that guy's supposed to be cool. I don't know, it seemed cool when I downloaded the picture.
He thinks he's cool.
Apparently I thought he was cool since I downloaded the picture. But, okay, he was 99 cent cool, but he was still fairly cool. There are certain kinds of technologies occasionally which people just think are cool, whether it's template metaprogramming or whether it's using unit testing in a particular automated testing framework or whether it's jumping on the latest bandwagon for the coolest agile technology or using the latest compiler features or whatever it happens to be. There's a certain segment of the population of developers who just think it's really neat to be cool. And so if you can somehow pitch what you're trying to do as being on the cool side of things, doesn't motivate everybody, but it motivates a certain number of people. So I found that to be a fairly effective thing. I think there's only five things on the list, so we're getting close to being done. Unfortunately, in my experience, there's not a lot of people who you can sway with pride of workmanship, but there is a certain number of people where you can simply say, listen, you know that this is just a better way to do it. It yields cleaner code, it's gonna be easier for people to be able to understand it and modify it. It's just gonna be better overall, and really a professional software developer would do things in this particular way. I personally wish that that were a stronger argument than it is, but it does sway some people. That say, you know I could do it this way with a shortcut, but really, I'm going to do it this way just because I know that's the right thing to do. And related to that,
part of that that I've sometimes found helpful is if you play the pride and workmanship card and people don't necessarily respond right away, sometimes you can sort of double down or ante up, whatever the correct poker term is, since I don't play poker, by saying you'll be helping the future maintainer, which could be your future self in 6 months.
Sure.
And sometimes that helps them see, oh, wait a minute, I'm really helping myself by doing the right thing itself, maybe a little abstract, but it can save me time later. Sometimes helps when you point out that you might be doing a favor, you'd be paying it forward to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, the last thing on the list, least effective, but still worth a try if nothing else works, that's morality.
That is such a sad but true statement.
No, it is sad, you know, but occasionally, and Herb, you've been known to make these comments, you know it's the right thing to do.
It's very
persuasive. What you should be doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there still are people with consciences, not very many, that's why it's last on the list. But I do want to make a caveat about the whole thing. If you're trying to convince people to do something, you're basically making a sales pitch. You are effectively trying to get them to buy into something. So the last thing I want to mention is, no matter what you do, you want to focus on being honest about things. For example, there is no change, there is no technology, there is no methodology, there is no system that doesn't have drawbacks. And to gloss over those drawbacks instantly makes you lose credibility. So it's perfectly reasonable, you know, this is what I think you should do, here are all the advantages. Reasonable people will often come back and say, well, what about blah, blah, blah? And you want to acknowledge that those are drawbacks, assuming they are, in fact, legitimate drawbacks. If you try to gloss over disadvantages to things or treat them like they're not important to whoever you're trying to sell, you are not going to be very effective in getting your point across, in my opinion. So you definitely want to acknowledge trade-offs. It also is really helpful if you use very realistic examples. As a counterexample to that, for quite a while, when people were trying to convince people that move semantics was this great new feature in C++ 11, which it is, by the way, but they'd show benchmarks about, look, you can do this, and it runs 400 times faster, or whatever. The problem was that the benchmarks, even if they were setting aside everything that Andre just said about setting up good benchmarks in the first place, they were completely unrealistic operations that nobody would have ever done. Like, what happens if you have a function which returns by value a vector of strings? Well, yes, you can make that arbitrarily fast. But no one was writing code like that in the first place, so it wasn't a very compelling example, in my opinion. So that's basically my general approach to the problem of convincing people to do stuff.
One thing I'd add, just please leave this up for a second. One thing I'd add, and you sort of talked about Sundar Payne, but it's worth its own separate point, is be concrete, be specific. Mm-hmm. You can show measurements, especially and then relate it to some of these, like relate it to their pain point. It's like, oh, by the way, did you know a certain function could be, was it 20x, 40x faster?
20.
Only 20. But what credibility that gives you. And by the way, this is, as you're saying this, it occurs to me that this is one of the things I love so much about Andre's talk that he just did, because he did so many of these. Specifically, he used realistic examples. He showed concrete data. He showed he understood what the issues really were.
I didn't lie.
No, that was Scott yesterday.
Okay.
And me, I tried that too. Mm-hmm. And even on the last slide, acknowledging the trade-offs, like even for instance, you know, 10 years from now, these answers may not be true anymore, but they're true today for today's hardware. And by the way, it's interesting that you mentioned with your example about for the 64-bit A2i or whatever it was this has been decades old and nobody's revisited it. Well, hardware has changed. We have prefetchers all over the place now, so of course you want it in order. And so being able to help people understand, like, you can have to convince somebody who grew up then that they should be doing these things to adopt these new techniques requires this kind of selling so that they'll be able to use the tools and understand why they work.
Yeah. No, and another good example, actually, by the way, you're not going to be able to tell, we really liked Andre's talk, which we'd never seen
really,
before.
Really good.
I've seen just one nod here, which is...
Everybody is still stunned with awe that they're just... don't know what the gesture is. But for example, you talked about don't bother to do strength reduction for divisions by do and stuff like that, because it's like compilers already do it.
Because the example that you find, like if you look for strength reduction, this is like the first five hits in Google, you know what, you should do that. It's worthless.
So, but that's actually a sales pitch too, and essentially you're trying to convince people to not bother to do that because it's not worth doing any longer.
Right.
And that's another example, trying to convince people to change behavior because maybe it was fine in the past, but now it's not the best behavior any longer.
So. I have a specific example I'd like to throw out there as to how to convince people to do, but before I do that, are there any specific thoughts that you wanted to throw in that you haven't already?
Sure. You know, first of all, I'm very curious to hear from you guys. I mean, the whole purpose of us sitting, actually, the whole setup here is conducive to us hearing from you what your opinions are. Let me actually throw one more thing on the table before we interact more. There's a very strong social, let's say sociological and psychological streak in all this, which is kind of Scott alluded to, like, you know, morality, you know, all that good stuff. And there's some more like workmanship, pride of workmanship. All of these are, you know, social things and phenomena, right? And I think there is a very strong social component, because let's face it, most of the advice that's purported around is debatable, it's contradictory, it's, you know, reasonable people may have different opinions. There's a lot, I mean, you know, there's people at work who could debate like the use of, you know, raw pointers versus smart pointers, and, you know, definitely sometimes one is better than the other. And people tend to overgeneralize one of the cases into like every time you need to do this, etc. And then so debate can go on forever. And what I think makes a difference here, and what the meat of my argument, the thrust of my argument is, you need to establish a strong correlation between what you preach and your results. You need to have people do as you say because you have so good results of what you do, at what you do. So personal example is the absolute most powerful, it's like changes the world. It's the absolute most powerful thing that you can bring on the table. You can bring, because people may think, you know, my coworker, you know, a smart person, you know, very smart, keeps a lot of things in their head, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, understand the whole program. And they have this mythical image of you that you're having good results as a sheer consequence of some, you know, genetic givens, as opposed to, I mean, you know how it's like, you know, everybody's forgetful, everybody has limits, which are, you know, painfully obvious to all of us, right? So we have limits and stuff, and, you know, it's the best to sometimes be lazy, to sometimes encourage your own forgetfulness, abstraction is forgetfulness, right? So essentially, you're organizing all of these things to compensate for the frail nature of us humans, which is, you know, quite frail, so to speak. So essentially, what I'm saying is that if your results as a person, as an individual contributor inside your organization, if your individual results are going to correlate strongly with the kind of things that you are proposing, then I think you have a very strong case, because your colleagues are going to see the correlation. They're going to say, oh, this person does this and has these results, so I better do the same, so I'm going to get similar results. Very often, when you're new in an organization, or when you know your work is not well known or whatnot, people tend to see this correlation as coincidental. They tend to think, Herb is a very smart guy, but he also has these tips he keeps on giving. You know, he keeps on giving me advice about stuff. He's good, no, nothing to say, because he's very smart. But he keeps on insisting about this, you know,
people
like,
shut up.
Don't use uninitialized variables. Why, you know, I know, you know, he's good because of other reasons. So, but with time, people are going to start seeing there is a strong correlation between the approach you're taking systematically and your results. And there's no better thing than having them seen that. And by the way, let me actually bring a counterpoint to one of Scott's points, coolness. The argument by coolness, I think, is a fallacy. Argumentum al coolestum. You know, that's what they call it in Latin, right? argument by coolness is not a good argument, okay? My opinion is that there's two risks involved. One is of creating a priesthood, and the other is being seen as a priest. And both are not good in an organization. One risk is you create a priesthood in which people do things the cool way, and there's so many cool ways, like, you know, whenever, like, when the STL came about and people were doing all the exaggerated things with and about the STL, and they were trying to slap iterators on everything, and they were trying to use for each everywhere instead of loops, right? So there's a lot of coolness in it that was not substantiated by any concrete improvements, right? And I don't think the coolness argument is as strong as it might seem. What I do think is that it's very good to have, again, results, impact, concrete measurements, you know, like very clear examples and stuff, as opposed to appealing to the notion that this is really the cool way of doing it, even though it's not substantiated by any palpable improvements. So that's a counterpoint to what you said. A
brief thought on the one thing you said. It is true. Like with this, I saw the panel topic, first thing I thought, and I'd like to know what you find difficult to convince people of. One thing you often see is people who are resistant because, no, I do it my way. Who are you trying to tell me to do something different? So there's resistance. But sometimes there's also what you said, which is, oh, this person is so senior. I mean, we have a senior audience here. So this person is so senior, maybe it's something genetic, right? There's I could never do that. So sometimes you have to overcome the, you can do this too. I learned it. You can learn it. And help them. Because you're senior enough that part of your role is mentoring. Now, sometimes it's also convincing. So there's the two aspects of it. But let me hold back the example I had. I'm curious, what do you find to be a challenge to convince people of, whether it's adopting a C++11 feature or new compilers or or anything else that you find? Who's taking hand? You want to get?
Andre's in charge, so.
I think
he who has the wine makes the rules.
What rules? Do I need to take the microphone to him?
No, you can point to
just call Andre.
Oh, yes, please.
Andre's in charge because we've just seen his
up.
Friends.
So it's the sale to the non-technical, especially upgrading compilers so you can even have the tool set when you use many compilers or platforms to be able to have access to the features.
Why don't you repeat what his comment was so everybody can hear it? Repeat what the challenge is so everybody can hear it.
That's what I thought I just did.
My understanding of the question was simply that the engineers in the organization are already on board with keeping up with compiler upgrades, probably using an ancient version, and that the product people, probably non-technical for at least some part, are holding that back because they don't see much upside in the disruption that would ensue, right?
To be completely clear, they're not actually holding us back. We just need to
make a good case.
You need to make a case. So, and so you're several generations behind in compilers, and there's the cost of upgrading
right,
the disruption.
Right, names. 4.2, what is it? Say it.
So roughly 4 to 6 years behind on various compilers, give or take.
And basically, compilers with no C++11 features.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
When is your next major product release? So you can't. So you're trying to reduce release cycles to, and you've got one coming up toward the end of the year, so in maybe like 4 or 5 months or so. So one thing to do is you probably won't get buy-in to do a whole release on engineering excellence kind of things. That's a term we use internally. You can't do a whole release on just housekeeping because you got to have something to sell the customer. So the good news is that you probably can't do you probably don't need a whole release cycle at 12 to 18 months to be able to upgrade, you know, 5 compilers to the latest ones. You probably do need a milestone. I don't know if your organization is milestone-driven, sprints, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
One thing that I found useful that works pretty well at Microsoft is to start off before you have your M1, milestone one of coding, or even your M0, you can plan for an MQ, so a quality milestone. In general, this is a good idea for catching up on technical debt, because there's always stuff that you left over from the previous release. And unless you plan for it, it ain't going to happen. Another thing is to quantify the cost of not doing this, because you're going to be carrying forward debt, and you're going to be carrying forward a tax on using aging compilers working around their bugs, because there'll be bug fixes in those new compilers. Use that argument as well. They will start not being supported very well by tools, by their original vendors. So as you're doing those things, those are the arguments to make perhaps, and let's plan for, and this is a great time to have that argument, we're gonna ship in December, or we're gonna close down in December. Let's plan to spend January, February on a quality milestone. And that can be one way to approach it and bundle it with some other things, because you still have the rest of the release to add customer-facing value and features that you can sell for the product.
Anyone has an idea for this? Anyone has an answer?
Yes. What have you found that works?
Yeah,
for that
what did
kind
you find
situation?
That works in this? One thing that worked in one instance for me was actually a compiler upgrade led to faster executables on legacy code. That's a very good point because it was like, you know, look at this graphic, you know, look at this chart. It's very easy. It's like, oh, okay, so let's upgrade. It makes sense. It was a very palpable benefit, even though I recall it was, I forgot, 5%, 4% improvement, but it was end-to-end on a rather critical application. Mm-hmm. And 4% is nothing to sneeze at. So you know what? Let's upgrade.
Some people would commit minor felonies for 4% company.
Right. So it depends on on where you are. But showing some concrete, for example, like build times are faster. I don't know. That's a possibility. Richard, continue annoying me. Destroy.
How would you convince people to use D?
Scott's most significant bit was very applicable. Find a pain point. Find a pain point. For example, for virtually all organizations I've been interacting with regarding C++, build times have been a huge issue. It's been I'm seeing nods, yes. So it's been people are just overly preoccupied with what should be a solved problem for decades now, but it's just not solved. And D compiles much faster. It's a non-issue in D. So this is a pain point that's obviously solved, and this is a very good angle to argue this adoption. But I think it's a very good parallel. You have the same challenges with C++ 11 versus C++ 98 or C+, remember? Yesterday, C+. There are people who program C+, and they want to switch to C++.
I think that measuring and showing the benefit is really key.
Yeah.
That reminds me of another thing. You can usually, download the next version of the compiler. Usually there's a free compiler or something. You can download the next version. On your workstation, quantify the cost to make it less of an unknown of changing by taking a major subsystem or project and upgrading it to the next compiler and showing how long it actually took. That will take a lot of the fear away. So quantify the benefit, but also quantify the cost. Then you can do the division.
Right. So diff, diff, it took me 3 hours to adapt this code to the new compiler. Here's the diff, took me 3 hours. Here's the new speed, new compilation time, new speed of the executable. Wow, very good measures, yes.
So what if you're using the latest compiler and it doesn't even support exceptions well, or it's not very conforming? And you mentioned an A word, so.
So you're referring to a fundamental limitation, right? Because there's no alternative. Sky is blue, you see what I'm saying? It's like the wall is hard. You can't go through it with your head. This is pretty much it.
Well, but at the same time, for example, the compiler comes from someone. And so, the point, if you have one vendor, you have one compiler, now you have a sales pitch to try to convince the vendor to upgrade their compiler. Presumably it's based on GCC 4.something, so they're not writing their own compiler from scratch, they're adapting an existing compiler, and you're sort of back in the same boat. It's just that now you're making the sales pitch to the vendor, trying to find things that they will find persuasive.
And in particular, the vendor of the Android operating system you were talking about happens to also be one of the two major companies working on a new C++ compiler.
Yeah.
That's another thing to point out.
Actually, let me point out, a change of language should not be out of the discussion. No?
Do you have a good D compiler for Android?
Not yet. But it's coming. All right, questions? Yes.
So repeating, you've got a large legacy code base, 20 plus years old, mostly C, very difficult to isolate just a subsystem to bring forward. How do you convince management to invest?
Well, and management with a track record of not being interested in making that change. So,
yeah.
Well, I just want to make one comment before we get some comments. I just want to say, I think it's important to recognize you're not going to be able to convince everybody of everything. And so sometimes you simply are dealing with people who, no matter how hard you try to persuade them for whatever reason, they choose not to be persuaded. In which case, really, your only choice is to try to find somebody else who you can try to persuade and find a way to work around that, which may or may not be the case in the case of this particular management. But sometimes you feel like you have an unbelievably compelling argument, and many other people who are familiar with the details agree with you, but the people you really need to convince directly, for whatever reason, are not willing to be convinced. And one of the things you have to recognize is you can't convince everybody of everything and then find other ways to deal with the issue,
right,
if you can.
One thing that this is sort of overlaps with what we've already said, but just to restate it a little bit, especially since you mentioned managers. Good managers, and I know not all are good, and it varies, varying quality, but good managers typically, even good managers, let me say, are frustrated by people who come to them with problems, saying, I need you to solve this, or here's a problem, and maybe propose a solution, but it's just, here's the problem, let's just do X, and the focus is on, here's how bad we are currently. So it's important to quantify the problem, But I remember having a discussion internally with someone who wanted to advance, and he asked me, well, I seem to be having no problem, and people don't, I keep telling them about all these problems, and nobody listens to me. I said, well, have you told them how to solve them? And he just paused, and a light went on, and I said, yeah, because managers want you to come with solutions to right. How do I solve the problem? Here's the some motivation, quantify it and measure it, but here's a solution, and here's what we should do, and an actionable plan, or at least a first draft of one. Sometimes we've already said that, but stating it in a slightly different way, especially when it comes to managers, that sometimes is more helpful. And again, you're not going to be able to convince anybody. But definitely don't fall in the pitfall of just saying, oh man, we're still in a C code base. This is just a bad thing. We can't just live in a C code base. Well, they say, well, sure you can. What's bad about it, and how does this solve specific problems? Comes back to the pain element.
Just a second, Adam. I'm very too concrete. So I understand this is a hypothetical situation because you're not working with that company anymore, right? But at any rate, I'm sure this is a repeated pattern. And I think there's two very concrete tips. One is, you know, let's do it just like our ancestors did it, using link time compatibility between C and C++. So you can always say, you know what, I'm going to use the legacy code base, no problem. I don't want to change it. But I want to build with it and on it better abstractions. And then you say, well, there's this new feature, and I'm choosing to add the C++ file that's going to link seamlessly with the C code. Awesome. That brings the other point. I think, again, Scott's advice, find the pain point, applies brilliantly here. Like, there are some things that are extremely tedious to do in C. And if you find such a pain point, I mean, think of this. Do a hash table in C. I mean, come on. You know, do a hash table in C. And if you go and show, here's a hash table code that we have in this particular module, in this particular application, and here's what you need to do in C++ to get the same results just as fast, if not faster, et cetera, then you have a very good case. And you have a solution, not a problem, on the table.
Yeah. The first thing, too, coming from a C program, I should have thought of that. You're exactly right. Link time and source compatibility with C is like one of C++'s biggest strengths. Yep. Leverage that to the hilt. Yeah. And because new code could be in C++, but you can also wrap existing code. Hey, let's not change this, but put type-safe wrappers around key things, around module boundaries, around subsystems, and that can help you migrate to
so,
this world.
Yeah, probably it's more like adding instead of replace, because the code is tested, it works, mm-hmm. has things going for it. So, but you know, adding is a much better proposition. So, Adam, you had a point.
I was just going to say too that I think for somebody who was in that kind of a situation, I would probably also mention things like, okay, you've got this old code base. It's going to become increasingly difficult to find experienced developers who know about that particular dialect of C. Long term, that's going to be a problem for the company. I would also, if they're a huge C fan, I would probably point out that in recent years, the more recent versions of C are beginning to adopt features which were first in C++, which in some sense indicates that people in the C community are now beginning to recognize that C++ had some good ideas. So, I mean, it really depends on where the manager's points are that you can sort of press, but I would focus a little bit on programmers. If it isn't even ANSI C, for example, there's no function prototypes or anything like that, I would probably start talking about the availability of tools that exist to support that dialect of C versus some of the more recent ones, static analysis tools, automatic documentation tools. You're sort of looking for a development ecosystem, and you're trying to find ways to convince that person that there is an overall better development ecosystem that will work with the existing code base but can help move it forward to the benefit of the company.
Adam, and then in the back.
So specifically speaking to management, talk in terms of how it will save money and reduce
dollars
expenses.
And cents.
Hard to find developers are more expensive. If a code that takes longer to write in a certain language is more developer time, which is money. Yeah, that's very true. So when you come to management, even if you have to estimate.
That's a nice word.
Bring them a financial model, net present value calculation, if you can Google what that is. I went to business school, but not everybody did. And try to speak their language. That will be very helpful in showing them, especially I like how you said, showing them how they can benefit within their fiscal time horizon. Because no candidate cares what happens 6 years from now if their term is 4 years. Which is a real shame, but oh well.
Yeah, I want to point out too, because I think it's important that, because your comment essentially was you have to tailor it for your audience, and if the audience is management, then they may use slightly different terms. But for example, for developers, the currency we normally deal with is things like how much memory we're using, how long does it take, how long does it take to do the build. So when we talk about, in terms of efficiency, that's our currency. managers use a different kind of currency. They may use headcount, or they may use how many dollars and cents and stuff like that.
Like currency.
That's still bullet currency, number two, basically. I would say, you know, it's an efficiency. It's essentially saying, you know, if it costs you this much money, this much time, whatever, it'll cost you this much money to do the same kind of thing. So you're still making the same fundamental argument, but using different terminology because you're dealing with people who work in a different kind of currency.
And when you do this, though, whether technically or with management, and they overlap, be ready to answer the question and raise it and answer it yourself if not asked. What's the opportunity cost? What are we not doing in order to do this? What feature are we not going to build of the five we'd like to do in this release, and we currently have room for three, and this is the size of one feature. So we're going to do one feature. What are we not going to do? Because there's the cost of doing something, and then there's the cost, the opportunity cost of you didn't do something else. And remember, you sell features. You don't sell engineering excellence projects.
Yeah, but
where
it's
the code,
also,
the code is cooler.
I'm sorry, but it's also, you know, what libraries can't we use? What tools can't we use? What developers are we not going to be able to attract? I mean, there's a lot of stuff you leave on the table by making certain sacrifices.
Richard, he was first.
To me, that would be an example of a kind of trade-off. I would say, you're right, there's not very many C++ 11 developers. In fact, to be truly honest, there are zero C++ 11 developers with experience, because there really hasn't been C++ 11 in its full, doesn't exist yet in its full form. That would, you know, that's going to be a drawback. On the other hand, I would say, for the people who are really excited about the language and want to really work on new exciting projects, this would be an incentive that would distinguish us from lots of other companies they might consider. They get to come in, they get to play with the new toys, use them in a production context. So yeah, on the one hand, you can't pick them up off the street, but the kinds of people you can hire, this can be used as an incentive to attract them to your company or to your group compared to other companies and other groups.
But don't give up too quickly on there being no C++ 11 developers, because a lot of C++ 11 features have been in compilers for a couple of years now. We've had auto, we've had lambdas and things like that, and we've had people who've started to learn to use them. Yes, we're still rolling it out, and we're still rolling out the books and the sites and the training. We're still doing that. But there's a lot of knowledge. And don't forget that there are approximately, out of 9 million or so, the number's been about stable for the last decade, roughly 9 million, depending how you count and whose study you talk to, professional software developers who do coding as part of their job. About, of those 9 million, 3 million are C++ developers. So there are more than a couple. Now, like any language, any industry, there's varying degrees of ability. But there ain't a small talent pool. There are a lot of good C++ developers who can very quickly see how auto helps them and already know much of what you need. And so it shouldn't be, oh, you know, this big shiny new C++ 11 or bust. There's a lot of practical stuff that's in shipping compilers today, and a lot of people who know how to use them. That's a big talent pool compared to, say, some other languages. So definitely play that up. We don't want to give up and say, oh, where are we going to find these people? They already exist. Let's tap into them. In fact, the higher end of those developers are the ones who are going to be looking, as Surat said, for those environments that let them use those tools, that untie their hands to use what they know they can already use today. Never mind what's coming next year as we complete conformance and compilers.
I have a question. How many, real quick, how many people work in the Bay Area? And keep your hands up, Northwest, Seattle area? Okay. East Coast? Okay, so there is. Okay, I was just, you know, aside from the Bay Area being sort of an alternate reality kind of universe, because it's just so much fight for talent there. Essentially, like the argument, the demographics-based argument, you're going to attract a much better demographics if you say we're doing cool stuff with C++ 11 and whatnot, as opposed to, oh, you know what, you're going to maintain a 20-year-old C code base. Mm-hmm. Definitely, this is a very good argument for any recruiter who's worth their salt. So it's a very good argument, yes.
Probably be isoccpp.org or as a fallback standard CPP. So I think the two key questions you asked were, what was the ISO C++ committee thinking about selling the new language and migration to the new language as they were designing it? Short answer there was a high fidelity compatibility, opt in to new features, and clean extensions to the existing language. For instance, lambdas just make STL work better. Even the existing STL is just so much better with lambdas and with R-value references, for example. The second answer, but we also left it a lot to compiler vendors, because they're the ones who have their customers, to bring their customers forward. That was the second part of your question. What about the compiler vendors? What are they doing to have white papers and posts and such? I can speak for MSDN. I haven't watched what others are doing. I know at MSDN you can find lots of white papers we've been publishing on using C++, on modern C++ style, and in fact, the site we're working on is because we see the need, not just for our customers, but across the industry, of having this and are willing to put money into it, to make it happen, to create it. And a lot of people are very thankfully volunteering to help contribute what they have to make that available. We have a big hole. We're trying to fill it. So that also will help as you have that ammunition and the how do I get from here to here? How do I migrate my team from C# to C++ or from C++ 98 to C++ 11? That is important, and we're trying to fill that.
We only have a few minutes to go, and I'm going to encourage people who did not ask questions yet. You asked during my talk. You asked a million questions. You asked one question. Hands up. Don't tell me there's nobody else now.
I want to point out that this is the man who knows the Latin word for coolness, and I didn't know that they said coolness in Rome. So
it was probably a neologism.
All right. Yes, please.
Right. So people are familiar with C++ 11 because some of it came from Boost. Also, I would add some came from what used to be vendor extensions, but that are now standard.
Good point.
No, the thing I find most... Oh, go ahead.
I think it's a perfectly legitimate point that even people with some older compilers, for example, as you pointed out, there's the JustThreads threading library, which works with VC9, I think, actually. So VC9 has no C++ 11 support, but you can actually get the C++ 11 threading API, the library part of the C++ 11 threading API available on that compiler. So there are some alternatives to that.
I was just going to say, what I find interesting is here we have a panel whose advertised title has been, and we have been talking about, convincing your colleagues. And I admit, coming in, the first thing I thought was my peers on the team to pick up new C++ 11 features. And virtually every single question has been about convincing management to invest in moving from C to C++.
Yeah, so it's not your peers, it's your superiors.
To upgrade compilers, to allow the use in within teams of coding standards. That is a very interesting data point. And I've seen that too, but I'm surprised by the exclusive emphasis on convincing specifically our manager colleagues.
Well, that's a bad sign. It's also a good sign. It means that peers are already on board. Yes.
Yes. So there's when our actual technical colleagues, there's disagreement on which features to use and when and how. So I have a partial solution for that. And there will be more coming, as we just said. But definitely go to Elements of Modern C++ Style. I wrote this for the primary reason of giving you a very short, you know, 3 or 4 page if you print it out or so, guide to here are the top features that change your style and idiom. First one's auto, with a few examples and why you should use it, because I found a lot of people say, oh no, I don't know what the types are. Of course you do. So there's some, you have to get over some of this, and here's some of the argument in a screen full, zoomed in. Smart pointers, why and how to use them. And null putter, range for, which goes along with non-member begin and end, lambda functions, and move. And then there's also uniform initialization. Most of those are available in most modern compilers. There is a very quick answer, and it was intended at least, to be a way to say, under elements of C++ style here, how you should be adopting C++ 11, where to look for first. So hopefully that class of question can have an answer, because these are the things that will pervasively change the style of how you write. Auto is one I found surprisingly resistance to. And it's not just in this language. When I did it, I Googled and Binged and so forth, and C# has the same controversy about var, and the people who say don't use it are wrong. So except the short answer for auto is, always use it unless you explicitly want a conversion. The details are on a nice package half page.
I have to point out that this is not a topic for this discussion, but unfortunately, the advice about you, basically your advice boils down to use auto unless you already know so much about the details of something you shouldn't have to know that you know that auto won't work. We can talk later.
No, it's use auto unless you explicitly want to convert the type.
No. But we'll talk about that later. Okay. So that's a whole different panel.
Can't wait to see this, you know? I'm going to bring Adam, by the way.
If it hurts, you're doing it wrong.
All right, orange shirt. Thank you.
Okay.
Start with small parts like utilities. Yeah. Show that they're more dependable, faster, and better.
It's a nice corollary of pretty much all of the above because we've been stressing some of these points more laterally. Mm-hmm. Okay, last two more.
Or minus two more.
Minus. No. Okay, last question.
And I have a comment.
Okay, in the back. Competitive advantage sounds like something management would love to hear.
Yes.
It's a good phrase.
Alex, you know how to talk to managers. Competitive advantage, great words, and that ties in with what you were saying about showing the monetary, but how it not just makes us better than we were before, how it makes our product better or our competitive situation better compared to competitors, and that includes competing for talent and as well as competing for market share for our products.
You know what? I would say Russian movies have the best ending, so let's end on a Russian note. So thanks very much, and have a good evening.
Thank
we'll
you.
See you in the morning.
Thank you.